Mrs. Reitman. I decided I would take this opportunity. Over the years, Charlie Scholl and I, we're good friends. We sit next to each other in shul. And so there have been different times that Charlie has had the misfortune of having to introduce me, and I never get a chance to introduce him. But I don't think he needs an introduction. That's why it's so gewaltig. You don't have to introduce him. But really, we want to hear from you, things that are on your minds. And if there's anything that each one of us can share from our own experiences and thoughts, then we'd love to do that. I was talking a little bit on Erev Shabbos about, we were learning Rav Kook, and I was talking about the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Yaakov says that Olam Hazeh is Darm Leprozda, that this world is like a hallway that's leading up to a great, fantastic, great chamber of the palace of the king, of the great banquet hall. And this entire world is like a Prozda that's leading up to that place. And we were talking about from Rav Kook. We were learning about Rav Kook, and Rav Kook had a sentence that Amiti is Kedushas Yisrael, he sha'olam haba v'olam hazeh hem inyan echad. The true Kedusha of the Jewish people is that realization, knowing in the clearest way that olam haba and olam hazeh are two parts of one reality. They're not separated. Sha'or olam haba yo'ir v'olam hazeh. That the light of Olam Haba should illuminate our pathway in this world. So when Rabbi Yaakov was saying that this world is like a hallway that leads to the great, to that great place, that final great place of the king, Rabbi Yaakov was saying that you better make sure that your hallway is not 50 miles away from the king's palace. You better make sure that the prosdor is leading right up into the great banquet hall, because every step that we take in our lives here must be illuminated by the light that's shining out from that place that we're all going to. And how to translate that into reality, how to be able to be at work, to be in the workplace, to be out there, and that every single moment is a moment of Kedushas Yisrael. Ehrlichkeit, Ehrlichkeit, honesty, yashus, remembering who you are, where you look, how people are looking at you, that when you're in the prosdor, when you're in the hallway, you can feel the warmth and the light that's coming from the place of the king. That's the tachlis of being a Jew. And that's the tachlis of being in this world, to make this world a place where Hashem is comfortable. Now, the reason that I'm unqualified to really talk about this is that I've never actually worked a day in my life. I've been teaching Torah Baruch Hashem for close to 40 years. Now, if that's considered work, I've never looked at it that way. I've never been in a regular office. I'm unfamiliar with that territory, and I'm therefore unqualified to comment on the reality of that world. But in my life, I have a dear friend who's sitting next to me that has been in that world, is in that world, understands that world, but is shining with the light that's reflecting from the chamber of the king. So I'll hand the microphone over to Charlie, to Shaul, and then we'll hand it over to you.
Thank you, Rebbe. It's truly my honor to be here, mostly because I get to sit next to Rebbe for a long time. As many of you may or may not know, Rav Weinberger is the sun to the moon. And a lot of what's going on in our shul, our home, is Rav Weinberger has been building us to be going able to go out into the workforce and try to hold on to a little bit what it means to be a yid. And so whatever I say here today is with the clear caveat that he can just say you're wrong and he's right. So just give me the heads up. He has total veto power over anything that I say, because it all comes from him anyways. I'm really taken by the room tonight. I'm really moved by how many guys are here. Ashrecha, that this is what we're thinking about. guys that are going out into the workforce that are recognizing that it's an incredible place and a place that we have to be properly prepared for. So thank you guys for being here. It means a lot. And I think that's why in the past few years we did this, we had spoken first. I think as soon as we got into your questions, it became more practical, which I think where we want to go. But I want to share sort of one idea, which is really where we are right now. You know, the Arizal speaks about the holiness of the different yontifs. And as we, you look out from the outside world, it looks like the holiest yontif is the yontif of Yom Kippur. Seems perfect. You get to go to shul, you act like a malach, you scream Shema Yisrael, you don't eat. If you're by us, you dance 30 minutes after it's over. And it seems from the outside that the ability for a Jew to be living in Yom Kippur is the holiest and the highest form of what it means to be a Jew. But our Chachamim are teaching us that this is a holier place to be. And that's not the place of Yom HaKippurim, but it's actually the place of Purim. Because the place of the Kodesh Baruch Hu isn't so clear. The place where you can't see him clearly, you can't see Moshe Rabbeinu clearly walking down with the luchos, the place where you don't really have the ability to sit all day and starve and fast and daven to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the place where you have to see the Kodesh Baruch Hu in the secular, if a Yid can make that move on Purim, in Adar, then that Yid is truly connected to the Kodesh Baruch Hu in many ways a deeper way. And the world of a Jew in the workplace is a world of a Jew always in Purim. He is always in Shushan. He is always, if he's paying attention, he always feels like Mordechai. And sometimes he feels like Mordechai right next to the Melech, and sometimes he feels like Mordechai with sackcloth outside the gates. But it's always in the midah of what it means to be Mordechai. And as soon as a Jew forgets that, and their nene from the Suda of Achashverosh, they start to lose who they are. And there are a lot of amazing, great, awesome, phenomenal, amazing guys. Hashem should bless them and their families that walk into this world with people that I know, and they walk in like Mordechai. And they're killing it. They're sitting in Beis Medrash here, and they're dancing, and they're singing, and they're learning, and they're owning it. They're a year in. They're 2 years in. They're 5 years in. They're one promotion away. And they wake up one morning, and they're like next to Achashverosh, being Nana from the Suda. And they don't even know how it happened. And it's not because they're not good guys. It's because they did not go in thinking about it. They weren't aware of it. They weren't doing this. They weren't sitting in your chairs. We sort of just figured it out. And I believe what it means to be a Yid in Adar, what it means to be a Yid in Purim, is to recognize how easy it is for a Jew, and Hashem should bless everybody, to go from being Mordechai to being sitting next to Achashverosh. That is one conversation from one boss who tells you, trust me, ride with me, and I'm making you, and just stick the title in here. And it's slowly, slowly, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. Why can't you go with us to here? Why do you got to be here? And slowly that Jew starts to turn his perspective from, this is why I'm in the workforce for, to do great, to, this is why I'm in the workforce for, to beat somebody out. And it's subtle, and it's nuanceical, and I hope that we can talk about it tonight. Like, I hope tonight we get like tachlis a little bit, and you guys push us a little bit to talk about life out there, and to ask for that level of hadracha, but sort of from a perspective of what we want to accomplish and what I think you want to accomplish, is I believe what me and you, well, our job, if you have in many ways, I would say sometimes this was, if not the chiyuv, to go out there in the world and be around people that are different, is to be able to stand like Mordechai, to be able to stand tall, to stand proud, to realize who you are, to give value to everything that you're doing, but to always, always remember where it really comes from. And so with that, I want to thank the rabbi for making this happen, Rabbi Baker, thanks for bringing us here. And I really want to turn to the crowd for questions, for ideas, and for thoughts that you have that Rabbi and I could start to deal with. Yeah.
Last summer, I was working in the office in Atlanta, and at the end of the summer, they offered me a job. They said that I had to tell them in advance whether or not I'd be able to stay in Atlanta or not. Obviously, I wasn't staying in Atlanta because I don't live there, and I'm just staying in the summer. So I called the advisor that I had from the New York office and said, you need to lie to them. Because if you don't lie to them, they won't give you a job offer. If you don't have a job offer, we can't transfer to New York. So my options were to either lie to my boss and have him screwed over, or in order to get the job that I wanted, or I could tell the truth and then not get a top level job.
And so what did you do? I mean, if you don't mind sharing with a couple of guys.
Yeah, I called Professor Kornwasser, and he said to tell the truth and not to adjust.
Ashrecha, you even have a professor that tells you to do the right thing, not just the rabbi. Ashrecha. You know, it's a milsul David Lugluya. You know what that is? It's something that's dishonest, that's going to be discovered. And even if it wouldn't be discovered, every moment that you'd be spending at that place would be dishonest. There are people that are in this situation, and I've dealt with that with chevra from the shul that have asked me this question. And sometimes they have a suffix that there is the possibility of staying in that Atlanta, wherever that Atlanta is for them. There is that possibility, and they would consider it. And it could be. But in your situation where that was not anything that was realistic for you, correct? It was not realistic for you to remain. It would be taking advantage, and that's exactly what Charlie was talking about before. That would be Kareya Umishtachava. That would be Mordechai bowing down to something that is not, that's not holy, something that's not pure. And whatever you lost by not having that position, you gained in having yourself and being honest to yourself and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Ashrecha, that you made the right decision, not even a question. Do you disagree?
Totally agree. Yes. But I want to share one idea. You know, I had in my career, I went back and forth so many times. I didn't have this. I didn't go to YU. At that point, I was just starting with Rebbe. I had my yarmulke on. I had my yarmulke off. I was, you know, I went, you know, Baruch Hashem, all of them together of halacha. But I was always, like, in the beginning, like, bouncing. And at some point in the middle, I remember going out to lunch, and there was a girl who was in law school with me who said to me, I gotta tell you, I'm really offended by you. That my father, who grew up in Germany, was able to wear a yarmulke and da-da-da-da-da, and was so proud to be a Jew, and I thought someone like you, who I know from whatever, would be more proud. Now, forget the yarmulke issue, we can talk about another time, but we can talk about that here if you want, but I remember what I felt like, and I want to share this with you, because I think this is what you're getting at, and I wanted to, like, deepen it a little bit. I remember going back into that office, and what I used to do is, they used to call us, a lot of guys, I think they're called Superman, because a lot of firms still have those term files. Do you remember, anyone remember Superman, Clark Kent, anyone know what I'm talking about? Thank you, Rebbe. So when he would go through that turnstile, like, he'd come out as like Superman. So there are a lot of Jews like that, a lot of from guys, God bless them. When they would go out of the turnstile, they would have their yarmulke on. And you come into the turnstile and you have your yarmulke off. You were experts at it. So I remember going through the turnstile and not wanting to take it off. Like, this is who I am. Like, I can't. I just can't. So I remember going back to the office at that point, wherever it was, with my yarmulke on. And I remember thinking to myself, this may change my career. Because of the chevra, because of the people around me. But I cannot, the minute I start giving myself up to my job, someone on top of me is going to manipulate it, and I'm never going to win. Like, I can't outplay God. And what you did was so great, because what I hope comes across to everyone, and by the way, it may not be so simple to other people, because it may be more subtle. It may not be lying. It may be like going to a place where you don't think you belong. It may be working in some days, like if wherever you are, I'm not passing out on a Chol HaMoed or on Tisha B'Av or on a Purim, and you may know if that's not who you are. Lots of times what's happening on the street is the initial reaction from the people above you is to make everyone look exactly the same. And when you first come in, you got to balance that properly with respect. But I'm telling you, from being 20 years in, you never, and I mean this, you never win in the end. The only thing that wins in the end is being authentic. You work hard, you do your stuff, you hold your line, and the Abishter never, I've never seen anybody in my life. They may lose a job, they may lose a deal, they never lose the money in the end. Because when you believe in something and you are strong to it, and somebody on top of you, this is why I want to get this point, starts to manipulate and go, do this, trust me, do this, I got your back, come with me here, double on this, fly with me here, why can't you eat this? What's the big deal? All of that stuff that takes place from that upperclassman, all that's happening is you're a pawn I got to play, and I'm not fully aware that you're just not able to be played. And the minute someone like give with all level of respect that sense of like, oh, by the way, I don't know if you read the memo, I don't bow to you, like Rebbe said, I can't be played in this area. At some point, people start to look at you and go, okay, you have something, you have some level of integrity that we really respect, and in the long run, that always wins out. Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
How does a person balance between knowing how to work hard, but at the same time give time to learning, give to put a lot of hours in the beginning, and then have that time?
Can you repeat the question?
So the question, make sure I'm getting it correct, is in the beginning of your career especially, there's a lot of hours that go into building your career. Lots of times you're on the bottom of that list. You do get the 2 o'clock phone calls. You do stay late at night. You're working weekends. You're working early. You're on someone else's schedule. How does somebody balance that high level of effort that has to go into their job with learning, with davening, with their yiddishkeit? Is that right?
Fino, it's very, very interesting. On the way here today, I was reading something. There's this kuntres that comes out for the parashiyos from Eretz Yisrael. And there was a word from Rabbi Yaakov Abu Chatzair in his Sefer Pituchei Chaisa. And it's on the Pasuk V'amalocha ha'isa dayum l'chol ha'malocha la'asois oisa v'hoisa. And what he explains is V'amalocha ha'isa dayum, the work that was put in was enough, dahainu. Im ha'malocha sh'oisim b'nei odem b'mele hisparneis gomru b'daitem shehi dayum. That a person, the Rebbe says, the Tzaddik says, that when a person decides that I, at this point in my life, I am expected to put in this day's work, and this is what this job requires of me, and I'm going to be doing the work to the best of my ability, and I'm going to prove myself to be one of the team, to be a team player, because that's very, very important. That doesn't require you necessarily to go on, you know, the January 1st bowling trip or something, wherever they do, but I'm a team player, I'm on board. V'amalocha ha'isa dayim, if the malocha sh'oisim ben eldam b'mele esparnes gomru b'daitim shehi dayim l'chol ha'malocha shehi melechas ha'kodesh, then you have to make up, the tzaddik says, you have to, in your mind, you have to make sure to set it up in such a way that even though you have to prove yourself and you have to work hard, but in your mind, there should be a point that you set for yourself of a malocha ha'isa dayam, that the work is enough that I'm doing, is enough. L'chol ha'malocha, the Rebbe says, shehi melechas ha'kodesh, that it allows me to stick to my davening three times a day, tefillah b'tzibur, that allows me to have, whether it's even 15 minutes or half hour in the morning, or half hour at night, but it must be in such a way that it's l'chol ha'malocha shehi melechas ha'kodesh shli yisbatl mishum tvila or mishum kviyas Torah. That doesn't mean that you should expect yourself to be the same way that you were in yeshiva. Obviously, you're not in yeshiva, and you cannot keep the storm that you kept while you were in yeshiva, and perhaps you'd like to daven longer, and you can't have that luxury of the long davening that you had earlier, but you must have a kviyas. There has to be a kvias tefillah b'tzibur, if it's possible. Sometimes it's not mincha, but it should be tefillah b'tzibur. And there should be a kvias itum when it comes to your learning. And then he says, Oz HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sholech Brocha B'maisa Yedeyam. And when you do that, when you know how to say Dayam, Day, Adkan, I have to be honest, I have to be a team player, but I don't have to prove myself by killing myself and destroying my davening, destroying my kriyas that I have every day to learn. To be able to have the emunah to say Dayam, must speak, Adkan. Then what's the Brocha? So he says, Hu Sholech Brocha B'maisa Yedeyam. And that's why the pasuk ends with the word v'hoser. You'll have more than enough. Just like Charlie was saying before, that nobody ever loses. Nobody ever loses. You might not see it today, you might not see it tomorrow, it could be a year from now, but no one ever loses, the same way you don't lose from being the person that you believe in at work and being honest and so on, like we discussed before. But the same thing comes when it's a kriyas to learn every day, to be able to daven tefillah b'tzibur. So obviously you're going to have to be realistic and cut down and have lower expectations of yourself to try to maximize your shabbosis, to try to maximize the times that you do have. But you have to be able to set a certain goal, a certain limit, and to be able to say, v'hamalocha ha'isa dayam. I don't have to stay in the office till midnight, because I'm not competing with this person who stays every night till midnight, because his life doesn't consist of what your life consists of. He might have some very nice things that's going on in his life, but he doesn't have ksubas, and he doesn't have Bava Basra, and he doesn't have Mishneh Berurah, and he doesn't have a Sfasemis or a Tanya. He doesn't have that, and you do. And as long as you remain anchored in that kviyas of Tefillah B'tzibur, and a set time that is always kept when it comes to your ruchnias, then you're able to walk out and to say Dayam, must speak, and to believe that v'hoser, that Hashem will give you as a result of that more than you need.
So I'll tell you a couple things that I use, and then people that I know have used it that I think could be helpful for those that are, some people here may be able to use it right even now. From what I heard, I never saw this personally, but Chaim Kanievsky would always say that he has what's called chiyuvim, that he has for himself a certain amount that has to get learned every day. He's got 1,000 people showing up to get brachas, he's setting up 5 hours later. The best thing that you can do, Vanias Daiti, is create chiyuvim for yourself. That means you got cover, period. You get it done because it's a slow day, matog manayim. You're working late, you're not sleeping. One of the greatest mistakes that we make is we constantly protect ourselves from discomfort. It's one of the greatest tragedies of greatness. We constantly choose comfort over greatness. Great people are mostly uncomfortable in everything. Tom Brady, Lahabdil, is uncomfortable, always. He went to the Super Bowl, the next week they're working out again. Bill Belichick, every per time you see anybody in any field that has achieved Hatzlacha that they didn't take, steal, or inherit. They worked for it on their own. They only got there because they chose. They're willing to be uncomfortable to achieve greatness. Everybody. And we, all of us, at least when I grew up, we grew up in a world where we have been so coddled that we think that the end of the road is comfort. Like the goal of life is first class. The goal of life is the bigger home. It's comfortable. Retiring, going to Florida, and like shuffleboard, apparently, is like it. Amongst great people, the minute they stop pushing themselves, they wither. And what it means to be a Jew means that you have to fight with the greatest sword that you hold to be able to live in this world but actually have your mind in the next world, which means there are going to be times where you are very uncomfortable. And you have to be willing to get that and to be proud of that. For those of you who start families, it's uncomfortable to be able to go home to a wife and a child or children when the people next to you are sitting next to you and they're so much better because they have nothing else to do in their lives. They live in the city. They commute 15 minutes. For those of you who may live in the suburbs, that's what my life was. You're not getting on an LIRR to go home and watch a kid. It's more uncomfortable to start a family when you first get started. I had a partner, I can tell you a story. I'm blessed, Baruch Hashem, I had twin girls a bunch of years ago. I'll tell you a quick story. My wife was on bed rest for my girls. They put her on bed rest for 3 months. 3 weeks before she, 2 weeks before she gave birth, she went into forced labor. I was in the city, I'm on Lexington Avenue. I get a call, can you imagine? I went out of my mind. My wife's being rushed to the hospital. I run to the hospital, forced labor. I come back to the partner in my group. I love this. This wouldn't happen anymore because now it's, everyone's more like, you know, politically correct. I come back to the partner in my group and I said, listen, the firm that I work for gives you a month paternity. Your wife gives birth that night. You text the HR lady, a month. I said, my wife just went to forced labor. I'm sitting on Spilkas. Let's start paternity now, and I'll come in earlier. It's the same month. Let's just start it now. Make sense? Looks at me and goes, can I give you some advice? I'm like, no, this isn't gonna go bad. He said, you can have your month, but when you come back, you gotta get your priorities straight. I did not have a child until I made partner. Do you know why? Because I have my priorities right. This whole family thing that you got is cute. But if you want to make it here, and you can become a partner in this firm, I want you to know something. No birthday parties, none of this late stuff. Get it together. You're mine for the next 8 years. You got it? And I'm like, yeah, I got it. Let me find another job. The world we live in are going to tell us that our priorities are wrong. And it's going to be uncomfortable for you to be able to balance that. How do you do it? I want to give you three quick things to think about. Number one, chiyuvim. Start now. You wake up in the morning, you got something to finish now. I'm not done yet. I'm here. I'll be up late. Now, what goes on in your day, if you don't check those boxes, you don't go to sleep. You lose a night of sleep, it only makes you stronger. And whether you're working late or early, and once you have chiyuvim, you start finding time like you never found before. Number two, I want to give you a chilek between output and impact. This is really, really important. Output and impact. Output is what you do. Impact is what it means to everybody else. Like Rebbe was saying, I think. My job is output. You give me a job, I'm not going to be lazy. Sometimes, you know, some people give people advice like, when you go to work, like, do it as quickly as you can and go home. Do the best job you can. You're getting paid. Be amazing at what you do. Don't take someone else's money and give them back bee work because they're not Jewish. I don't know how that started, but it's got to stop. Someone hands you a dollar for your services, you give them $1.50 back. But remember, all you're responsible for is output. The impact of that, whether he likes you, he doesn't like you, whether you got shoes with this person or that person, whether you got all of that impact and who likes you and whether you're going to make it, that's Hevel Havon. If you focus all your attention on what you produce, you're going to see that if all you're thinking about is what you produce, you're going to produce great stuff. And if you're not worried about the impact that it's going to make on your clients or employees, you're worried about just you and not what it does to you, you're putting that in the Kodesh Baruch Hu's hands, you're going to have a lot of free time. First is number two, impact and output. And the third thing, and I'll end with this, is remember, you never have time. I don't know why that, we don't have time. We make time. Nobody has time. Rebbe does not have time. I've never once seen him not have a full schedule. People that are achieving things in life never go, hey, what am I going to do today? I don't know. Like, I don't know. You want to do something? I don't know. Why don't you hang out? It doesn't exist. And when you start to see time as that in which you make and not that in which you have, now you become a little more of the Baal HaBaas. And so even if you're working hard, you still recognize you have to make time for what's important. Thank you, Rebbe Gush. Yeah?
Rebbe mentioned that we don't have to do public events, but I was flat out told at day one of my interview for the position that I was in this past summer that if I didn't go to those, that there was zero chance of me ever getting a job. So I just wanted to ask you.
Look, each one of those questions has to be examined individually. There are questions that are halachic and there are questions that are not halachic. So it's hard to say a general principle of it. It doesn't mean that a person cannot attend, I just made a broad statement before, but it doesn't mean that a person cannot attend any of the events, any of the activities that they have for a holiday or something. It needs to be, each one needs to be discussed and evaluated based upon what is expected to take place there, what's the atmosphere there, if you're married, does your wife come? Issues of tsnius, and there are other things that need to be considered. So I've had many questions like this come up every year, especially when it gets to the holiday season. And more often than not, I've told Chera from the shul that okay, try to show up. It's important that you show up, and stay for a little bit, depending upon what the nature of the event is. Stay for a little bit, and this way, I think most of the people that are at these things understand by now that you're already different, and go for a little bit, and you don't have to necessarily stick around. And I have found that not only do people respect that, but I think that people generally appreciate it. I'll tell you an interesting story that happened to one of the guys in shul. He told me that he took the job. He was new in this place, and it came to the winter, and he went to ask the boss about leaving early on Friday. Shabbos was coming in very early, and he had to leave early on Friday. And he went to speak to the boss, and the boss asked him, when would you like to leave? So he said, truth is that I really would need to leave by 1:32. Shabbos is at, 4:15. I have to leave by 1:32 to be able to get ready for Shabbos. And the boss told him, okay, that's reasonable, fine. Now, there was another frum guy that worked in that office, and he had a conversation with this guy, and he told him, you know, it went well. So the second guy went to the boss, and he said, you know, I just want to talk to you, and we have Shabbos. And he said, yeah, I know, I heard about that, I understand, and it's early now, this time of the year. What would you like to do? So he said, he figured he'd say the same thing that, you know, the first guy said. He said, well, I guess 1:32. So the boss said, no. Where do you live again? So he said, where do you live? He said, nah, you have time to leave by 3:15 and still take a shower and go to the synagogue. So the guy said, I don't understand. I know for a fact you told my friend, you told the other guy, whatever, your uncle, you told him that he could leave 1:30. So why do I have to stay till 3? We're both Orthodox Jews. So the boss told him the following. The boss said, listen to me. Your friend, I noticed, and it was brought to my attention, the boss says, your friend doesn't shake any of the women's hands over here. And from the first day that he was here, he made it clear, in a respectful way, that he doesn't shake hands. So that's a real Jew. That's the boss. He's not Jewish. He said, that's a real Jew. You already, I see that, you know, you're shaking hands. You can leave here at 3 o'clock. That's what he said. This person shall tell that he. So that doesn't always have a happy ending like that. Well, at least for the first guy, it had a good ending. Not for the second guy. But I really have seen time and again that people appreciate authenticity. They appreciate a person who is real and who is God-fearing. They appreciate that. I came here today, I came with a driver, came in an Uber, and there was a non-Jewish fellow, and I was on the phone the whole time, talking about this guy's problem, that guy, this lady called. I was on the, for an hour and 15 minutes, I was on the phone with stuff, and he's turned around before I left, and he said to me, you're a man of God. I said, what? You're a man of God. I heard you talking about God and you're trying to help people. You're a man of God, and it's an honor to have met you. And I was very touched by that, and I said, I appreciate that, and if you feel that, then you're a godly person yourself, and thank you, and have a nice day. And that was the ride that I had here today. And I found that people generally appreciate those who they associate with a sincere and authentic way of serving God. Now, attending an event, many people don't understand, like, what's wrong with volleyball on the beach, you know, co-ed volleyball on the beach, you know, like, what could possibly, you know, how could that be against your religion? You don't have to have any bacon that's being served or you don't have to do it on Saturday or on Yom Kippur or something. So why would there be a problem with volleyball on the beach? You could wear your yarmulke and everything. So, and there are people that call themselves Orthodox Jews who might not see that there's any problem playing co-ed volleyball on the beach. You know, but I think that if you make it clear from the beginning, you know, when Avraham Avinu, when Eliezer went to the house of Lavan to find the Shidduch for Yitzchak, you know what he did? It's an amazing thing. When he went to that place of the Su'al of Lavan, see, he says, Eved Avraham Anochi. Eved Avraham Anochi. Now, they already knew who he was. They knew who Eliezer was. And they knew why he was there. So why, in the middle of the entire story, before the negotiations become serious, why does Eliezer have to say, Eved Avraham Anochi? Because what he was saying was to the family, listen, Chavre, I don't want to hide this. I want to make it very clear from the beginning. We're about to start our negotiations. All right? I want you to know, Eved Avraham Anochi. I'm an Eved Avraham. I'm a servant of Avraham Avinu. So I just want you to know that from the onset, that that's who I am. And I'm not going to compromise that. When you come someplace and you're able to convey in a dignified way, Eved Hashem Anochi. Eved Hashem Anochi. I am a servant of Hashem. I'm a person of God. Not that you wear that in your sleeve, not that you try to show off, not that you try to make anybody feel uncomfortable, but I am different. Eved Hashem Anochi. So when you do that, so it'll save you a lot of trouble later on when it comes to explaining why you can't go to the volleyball game. It'll save you trouble. They might not understand, but they'll respect you from the beginning.
So this question, you know, what Rebbe said was obviously exactly right. And I deal with a lot. Spend a lot of time in corporate America, a lot of time in the game of something happening. This is like every week in corporate America, especially now. I'll tell you what I would think about, and maybe that could be helpful in terms of whoever is going to be in this world of corporate events. I don't remember which Rebbe was, maybe Rebbe remembers the story about the guy who was a Chassidish guy who went on a business trip, and the Rebbe asked him to bring him back something, and a token from the place he was going to.
Dim Ramis?
And the chassid goes and comes back and says, I forgot, Rebbe, I'm sorry. He goes, do you think I care about the thing? I just want you to think of your Rebbe when you're on your business trip. When you're in a place of corporate events, you come at it from one or two perspectives. And this is so critical. It's so horrible. It's unbelievable. I just saw a shot. Why were the Jews punished for going to Sudas HaChashverosh? It wasn't because they ate from the Suda because it was kosher food. It was because they were nana from the Suda. Hanah is so much deeper than just being able to have oneg. Oneg is a simple pleasure of eating. Hanah is deeper. The Hanah that the Jews got from the Suda Sachashevish was that they walked out and said, we're hooked up with the king. He invited us. We're hooked up. We got it. We just solidified our political future. You think that's where you went? Because you were nana, like as if now you're hooked in? You don't mean the Abish there? Fine. And that was the beginning of the end. Number one, whenever there's corporate, I want you to understand how corporations work, because now I see it from the other angle. When you're on the bottom, when you first come in, you think it's like Yarek Val Yavar. When you get a little older and you get a little bit into the executives, what you realize is that corporate events have two major functions. One, because the executives feel like they don't do stuff, there's going to be like a mutiny. Like they want to pretend they're cool. They want to pretend that like you're not working as an accountant, but like you're actually playing volleyball. They want you to, and if they don't do like 15 programs to make you feel, then like they think people are going to leave. Number two, they want to see if you're a good guy. People don't like working with people that they don't like. You can be less qualified than the next guy, but if you're a good guy, people like working on people that they like. So how do they know if they like you? So when you go to these events, people get a sense of who you are, they build a relationship, and then they see for themselves if you're a type of person that they can see working with. And then on the flip side, they feel like you feel that to them. The two reasons why we have events for is because we think people need it or they'll leave, Or we're trying to create a camaraderie in the firm. When a person walks around their job and is a good guy, always, like no bad days, no like you're off, no like you're snapping at people, no like you're exhausted, so no lashon hara, no politicking. When you're a good guy, like you're always a good guy, you're always smiling, it's always good morning, it's, yeah, I'm happy to do it, sure, I'm here for you. When someone's like talking about someone else in the workplace and they're trying to lure you in and you're like, respect, when you're a good guy, people like to be with you. And you don't need to be at a party for them to know they're like to be with you. You know why? Because they actually work with you. And the need to be at every single function starts to minimize, because when you come back to the office, you're a good guy. And you're enjoyable to be around. But this, by the way, highlights one of the most important aspects that everyone needs in this room. Do not think you're going to go into the workforce and have a successful career without a Rebbe. It doesn't work. You can't come out of YU and say, I learned for X amount of years, I'm going to call my Rebbe once a year, and I'm good to go. You need a Rebbe to take you through it, because this is exactly the story. Because there are events, and then there are events. There are events that I went to, and there are events that I showed up for 1 minute and said, hi, I'm here. Oh my God, this is amazing. Yeah, where's the kosher food that you got from, like, you know, Abe's Deli? Yeah, that's kosher style. Let me just take a circle, and there's a back door, and I'm going downstairs, and I'm Ubering out here. I'm waving at anybody for 3 minutes, and then I'm out the door. And there are events that either I call in sick, or my kids need me, or I'm so sorry I missed, or I can't do it, or I'm not walking in that room. Because life isn't black and white. But when you go out into the world, you have to understand why they do what they do. At the end of the day, when you are who you are, you'll surpass most of it. But there are going to be times where, to your point, yeah, there are events that in some of these companies, they're going to take attendance in the beginning to see if like you're a team player. But if you don't have a Rebbe that you can talk this through, you can't make a call like this. Because remember, when it comes to work, you have to realize that every call that you're making, you're no gavah davar. The negias of money is unbelievable. I know people that they come to shul and they're like, not in our shul, of course, in other shuls, and they're superstars and they're good, I mean that seriously, and they're good guys, and then like, they're Balei Chesed, and you see them on the street, and they're like, into Hashem, and you see them in an office, you see them like in front of a deal, and if you're just not watching, they will rip your head off. Because money has negias. When you put money on the table, there's negias. When your career is on the line, you have negias. So when you make tough decisions later on, you got to go in understanding that a lot of what you can be doing is you're building already. Like, for example, taking days off, this is a policy you got to use right away. We take a lot of days off, especially when nothing falls out that Monday, Tuesday. So just forget about it. Well, I remember my first week in the job, I remember I started like in October, and they're like, welcome to the firm. You're working with a nice law firm. We're going to pay you a lot of money. You're going to work really hard. I'm like, yeah. By the whole working hard thing, you know. Next week is Rosh Hashanah, so I'll be out for 2 days, and of course I turn into a pumpkin the night before, so that's 3 days. The next week's Yom Kippur, they're like, oh, we heard of that. I'm like, well, then the fun just begins. And then I'm sitting in the booth for a week, so see you in December. You know what I'm talking about? You're going to be taking days off. I'll tell you what you got to do. This is a great move. I learned this from some of my mentors. You know who's working on Thanksgiving? You know who's working on Christmas and New Year's and every single legal holiday? We are. The email goes out to my group every single legal holiday. Hey guys, just letting you know, I got you covered. I'm in the office if you need something. I'm in. The least I can do is to give a guy December 25th. The guy gave me the entire month of October off. And every single Friday in the winter. But when they see you do that, you know what they say to themselves? This guy's a good guy. Everyone's out Thursday, Friday for Thanksgiving, and you're in the office saying, hey, you're covering. You know what they're saying to themselves? This guy's a good guy. He's religious. He's a man of God. He has his principles, but he's not trying to take his principles and shirk responsibilities. He's a good guy. And this is the type of stuff that you got to do early. You got to be proactive. Because when you start building this type of aura about yourself, this is what you become. They start looking at you and saying, here's a man of principles that's willing to go above and beyond for us. Why would I ask him to violate the principles that he thinks are here? And then a lot of the questions you have later on solve themselves. Like Rebbe said with the story of the handshaking, because when you identify yourself early and you're a good guy about it, the people that are on top of you, really, they don't want to hang out with you. They want you to just do good work so they can make more money. It's a business. They're not married to you. They're not related to you. They're not your sons. They're not your father-in-law. They don't really want you to go out and party. They just do it because they want you to work harder and make them more money. And when you see that as your whole aspect of working, then a lot of how you are treated in the workplace really changes. Yeah.
Rabbi once mentioned his encounter with Bill Babichrabi. Rabbi was struggling between becoming a lawyer, maybe becoming a Christian. I was wondering if Rabbi could explain a little bit what was going on. We're not people of Babichrabi and get that validation that we should be going on this path. So I was wondering if Rabbi could expand on how one can deal with is there such a mindset of lechatchila thinking of how the Jewish people could use me? Or, I think it's a two-part question also, if you could talk about maybe how you implemented more Kedusha into your life as a lawyer by speaking more and more and more. How do you balance that? But also, is there a little bit of a mindset? I don't know if you understand what I'm asking. It's kind of hard to explain.
No, it makes sense. Please.
So we can share it with you.
So the question for me was, how does one balance being in the secular world and also trying to be involved in what would otherwise be known as Clay Kodesh? Yeah. The truth is, when it comes to that stuff of speaking, I had nothing to do with any of that. Hashem really was mantra everything. I started off in NCSY when I was in college, and in that environment, and then I got to law school, I started to really touch what's a possibility for how to just be involved in a world of inspiration. Never had that in high school. Went to wherever I went, it was fine. Everything's great. If you're listening to this, I had a great time. And, but it didn't really inspire me. I wasn't very inspired growing up. Eretz Yisrael helped. But it really wasn't until college, and I went to an incredible, this is an incredible yeshiva. This is the best yeshiva in the world. Everything's amazing here. I went to a different yeshiva. I went to Yeshiva Shayashiva. I had a Rebbe there, Shmuel Brazil, who really was able to light something in me. And in college, honestly, and then right into law school, I was able to get involved in NCSY from the advisor perspective, and honestly didn't want to leave, so as a result, I was the oldest guy in the room. So they had really no choice, they had nothing to do with me, because I couldn't sleep with the kids, because I was married. So like, they're like, what do we do with this guy? He keeps on coming back. Like, you know what, you want to say something? Like, I'm like, okay, maybe. And so what I learned at that moment of being there was the following, and I think it's really important if you guys get this as well. Working for a living should not preclude being involved in the club. Those two should never be. You should never sever an involvement in Klal Yisrael with working. If you can, be mechayev yourself to do something for the club. So you're the president of the shul, or you're giving a shiur on Mincha Maariv, or if you can figure out a way now in college to line yourself up and make a decision, especially when you start dating and start building a family, that I need to always have my hand in Klal Yisrael, and I will never leave it for more money, and I'll never leave it, even I have to wake up late and wake up early or go to whatever. The minute you're able to attach yourself to the Klal, your job has a different meaning to you. What a lot of people think is that the way a Baal HaBos should act is focus 100% of your attention on money, make a lot of it, then when you're done making a lot of it, give a lot of it to Klal Yisrael, and then you'll be a Baal HaBos. That's a path for some people. If you take it, wonderful. And there are a lot of people, by the way, that are like that. They've made some significant money, they focused it on the early in their careers, and then they turn back as they get older, they have more time, and then they double back into Klal Yisrael. It's awesome. I find that path to be wonderful if you hit it, but dangerous if you miss it. More guys fail than succeed on that path. More guys that I know with the idea of I'm going to work my tail off for the next 15 years, I'm going to reach a certain level of financial success, then I'll have more time, then I'll have more ability, then I'll have more money, and then I'm really going to give to Klal Yisrael. The few yechidim that pull that off, amazing. Most people fail along the way. Along the way of becoming successful, they forgot what it means to be part of Klal Yisrael. The managing director, the next deal, the next property, that became way, because business, by the way, is a lot of fun. And if you're good at what you do, it's really intoxicating. And winning and losing and trying,
and people get lost. So whatever you're doing when you start your career, the advice that I hope you take, especially because you're in YU, you're here, or if you're listening to something, if you're in college and there's stuff to do, do something and attach yourself to something and hire yourself to be part of Klal Yisrael. And you never let that go, because what's going to end up happening is, I think the Abish is going to show you that you can be involved in the Klal and still Parnassus is not going to get impacted. And you, along the way, as you get older, what's going to happen is that little rope that you hold on to called Klal Yisrael will always keep you grounded, because you have a chiyuv to deliver to somebody. You got to get involved. You got to deliver this. You got to give this shiur. You got to give this class. You got to, you know, be able to start this organization. And that will help you balance wherever you're going by still staying connected to the Klal Yisrael. Does that answer it a little bit?
Let's move on to the next thing.
Okay. Yeah.
Go back to being involved in the Klal. There are a lot of very good, very worthy institutions, yeshivas and mostos that are very much worthy of our meister money. So I was wondering if we could have some perspective on how to prioritize giving tzedakah.
I think it's an excellent question, and Bez Hashem, you should be in a position where you'll have so much, and everybody will have so much that it's hard to figure out how to divide it up. I don't think it's the time to discuss that. We had it in the shul years ago, because some of the balabatim were asking me this, so I had around 6 or 7 shiurim on the subject of how to prioritize. It's a complicated sugya in Yerudaya, not just klabi ma'isik sofim, but as far as tzedakah itself is concerned, I think that it really would require a different venue, not for right now. It's an important question, but it's not for right now. When it comes to, in general, to inyan mitzvah tzedakah, so obviously I tell this all the time to mishulachim that come to collect. Now that each one that comes, because I'm a rav, so I'm constantly barraged by fellows that are coming to collect from Eretz Yisrael, from here, and each one that comes has one thing in common with the other fellow, is that my inyan is the most important inyan on earth. My karlal is different from every other karlal, and my hafnasas kala is, and they mean it, and I always tell these guys, I try to give something on behalf of the shul, but I always tell them that, you know, you need to find somebody that's like a meshuggah for your inyan, because every holy undertaking in Klal Yisrael has somebody that is in love with that, and he just maybe didn't hear about it yet. But you need to find that Meshiganah. That Meshiganah that's, when I say Meshiganah, I mean a good way. When it comes to inyan mitzvah tzedakah, there are natural inclinations that each one of us have. We might not know what they are right now. Like, you might feel that you're saving Klal Yisrael by Tomchei Shabbos. Another person might feel that I'm saving Klal Yisrael by getting guys and girls on campus to help with Kiruv. And you have to be faithful to that inclination that you have within the guidelines of Hilchos Tzedakah, because Hashem is speaking to you in that way. He's speaking to you in a very, very personal and deep way. That your tikkun of who you are in this world and what you're going to have in the next world very much depends upon connecting to that. I know a guy, he's an old friend of mine, he has spent the last 45 years or so raising money to give people tzitzis. He just goes around the whole world giving out talis krokos. Now that might sound a little bit funny, especially if you're like, you're more into tefillin. It's much cheaper, by the way, if you want to start off with tzitzis. He has something with a talis cotton, with tzitzis. What was that? How did that start? What gilgal was that in? But it's something real. And you could argue in Hilchos Tzedakah, like, what's the priority of giving out talis cottons to people who don't have one, or, you know, stopping people on the street? Hey, how'd you like to have a pair of tzitzis? You could argue with that, but there's something very deep in that feeling that a person has of what's my priority. But you have to run that by, obviously, a posek in terms of how to divide your money and to see whether or not you're missing something in Hilchos Tzedakah that has to be discussed with a posek. That's Shimmy.
So, hours. I'm working now. Same people, 8 hours every day, basically. It's very common where I work that everyone swears or uses curse words a lot. So obviously not to use those words is obvious, but how do you like manage not being affected by being around that, you know, 8 hours a day, every day?
It's really hard. People curse. Again, if you've never heard of a concept of middle path, why would people not? I mean, I guess you have to be really refined. And it just feels like today that the level of sort of the general cultural refinement of speech is sort of lost. I don't know if everyone has a different opinion on this. It's really hard to not be impacted by people when you're with them a lot. The few things to think about, obviously, is you're obviously not going to swear. I think whenever you're in conversation and people get excited about something, just the ability to sort of constantly be in motion of having clean speech matters a lot. I did so many things to try. I mean, like, sometimes I would just, you know, I could tell you some, I hear people curse a lot. Sometimes I would make up a word that sounded like the curse but wasn't the word and say that in my head because I just couldn't hear some of it. It was because sometimes when you're especially in some of these businesses, the answer honestly is to do the best you can to not let it impact you. Say as many tulips as you can that you actually have anywhere we can, you know. But from a practical perspective, I have found that when you are so careful with your speech, not only in your speech and language in terms of nibble pep, but also your speech and negativity and positivity, it starts to rub off on them more than they rub off on you over time. So there is no good answer on that. There are some tricks, mental tricks like brain hacks we can talk about because of neuroplasticity in terms of making sure that doesn't hit. But mostly it's just diving. I can tell you a quick story. I was once with a group of people that went together every lunch, and the boss of this chevra years ago would talk about his favorite website that he went on the night before. And that was the entire conversation of lunch. And I'd sit in these four guys, and this is what they'd be talking about. And the first two times, I didn't know what to do with myself. And after maybe a week of listening to them just banter around, like, which ones of me just sitting quietly, like Kaylee, Lama, Zavtani, Esther, Malka, and like that, I said to one of the guys, I said, I love you guys, and I want to be part of this group. I just can't sit there. And it was like a moment where, like, they weren't sure, like, what happened to me. Like, I mean, this guy's like a poor and powerful guy, and, like, am I, like, not a normal man? Like, what, are you kidding me? Like, who wouldn't do these things? Like, he had no hasaga, like, that a person that was a, let's say, a normal, healthy person in that era, like, he had no hasaga that he wouldn't, like, do the same thing. Like, he wasn't being mean, he just was so, he was so unrefined. And I just couldn't go to lunch, and I said something to somebody, and it was with the highest level of respect and deference. And the next day at lunch, they made a comment like, okay, the rabbi's in the room, let's talk about, like, I don't know, like, politics or something. And I'll never forget feeling so uncomfortable. I don't think cursing is the same level of that type of stuff, but I'm just giving you like a... And then 2 days later, one of the guys came to me and said, you know, I'm not a Jew, but, you know, I was raised a good Christian boy, and my father was, you know, whatever, 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 and I just couldn't sit through it either, but I appreciate you doing that. So I don't think cursing is in the workplace seen the same. Always be at the highest level, and you'll be surprised just how much if they don't stop cursing, they slowly stop cursing around you, and then daven at the Kodesh Baruch Hu saves you from there and puts you around people that are more refined, because you need that tefillah as well.
Look, I agree 100% with everything that Charlie is saying. I don't think that's the swearing, the cursing, that's not really what's going to cause you to come home feeling like you got to run into the shower or get to the mikveh. I think that everyone here is very far from that, and it's not something that is enticing or alluring or something that's pulling you suddenly in. I think it's more what Charlie's talking about, and even less, even more subtle conversations of the kind that you have, the kinds that you have to hear. There's a certain avira that's in a non-religious environment, in a non-Jewish environment, there's a certain avira, and there are subtleties that in many ways are much more dangerous than the outright nivelpe, or the just the filth that's flying around the room. There's a certain edelkeit. I don't know how to express this in words. There's a certain gentleness that a Jew has, that a Jew that Shemit Torah Mitzvahs, that Yirei Shemayim has. I'm much more worried about that when it comes to my kids and to my balabatim being exposed to that world. To those subtleties that have a way of creeping into your life, a certain way of looking at things, an insensitivity. I remember there was a student of mine, a young lady, it was many years ago, that a Russian immigrant, and she was studying to be a pharmacist. And at that time, I don't know about now, but at that time, I think one of the only schools we could do that was in St. John's in Queens. And I hadn't seen her in a while, and I asked her how was school going, and she told me that it was great. She was doing very well. However, she found it to be very, very upsetting that in every single classroom there was, you know, Isa Ish. There was Isa Ish was hanging up. I think you all know who I'm talking about. That there was a crucifix, and that Isa Ish was, it wasn't just a crucifix. It was a Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin crucifix with the Isa Ish hanging on it. And she felt very uncomfortable. How's she supposed to bench? How's she supposed to make a bracha when Yazel is hanging over there and looking at her? So what's she supposed to do? So we discussed it a little bit. And anyway, say that. And then I hadn't seen her after I didn't see her for a long time. It was like a year later when I met her again. And I remember her name was Tanya Tova. And I asked her, so Tova, how's it going? School's great, man. So I said, I asked her, what's going with Yasala? What's doing? That's how my father called him. They call him Yasala Pandri. That means Yasala, the one who's hanging. So what's doing with Yasala? So she said, you know, I don't mind. I get used to it. I said, you better start thinking about getting someplace else. I don't know if you can stay there anymore. It's one thing when it really bugged you and it bothered you and you felt you were out of your element. But if you're starting to feel like okay and you're comfortable with it and something is wrong, these are the subtleties of the office. Charlie's talking about things that are not subtle. And there's a lot of that. But you have to daven mamish for shmira ma'al yisuf, that Hashem's Baruch should watch over you. When a person is in the mindset that I spoke about just the first minute when I was talking, that you're in a prosdor, and that, you know, there's another mission in Pirkei Avos, the same Rabbi Yaakov acquainted in Nusach L'Tosfos Yontif, where Rabbi Yaakov says that a mahalach b'derech, that if you're walking along the path, v'shoyne, and you're learning Torah, u'mafsik m'mishnaso, and you stop learning, and you say what? Man no ilan zeh, right? How beautiful this tree is. Ma'alo levakoso kilim mischayev v'navsho. It's kilu yechayev to get killed. So the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh asked, why? The guy's chayav to get killed, kilu. Of course he doesn't get killed, but he's worthy of dying. Why? Because he was walking and he admired Hashem's world. He looked up and he saw a tree and he said, Man no ilan zeh, for that he deserves to die. What's wrong? That's a tree in Hashem's world. What's wrong with admiring it? So in the Kesef Hashem Tov, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says the following. It's brought in his name. It's originally found in the Talmud Zion, if you guys there. But the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh said, the problem with this person is that he's mafsik mimishnasa. If you're living in your Yiddishkeit, if you're living in your Shemayim, if you identify yourself as a Jew, as a Mordechai HaYehudi, you're a Yehudi, then when you admire God's world, you're not mafsik mimishnasa, you're not interrupting your learning. See, there are some people that they begin the day in shul, in Olam Haba, and then they leave shul, and they're in Olam Hazeh. And those are two separate worlds. When you're in shul, you're a Jew. And when you're at work, you're not a Jew. then obviously you're susceptible. You're every single word is nivelpe, every single pretty girl in the office. And if you're really desperate, even if she's not so pretty, it could be like, you know, a 75-year-old secretary, if you're desperate enough. But anything that's going on over there could bring you down, and you wouldn't even notice it. It might not be nivelpe. It might not be discussions about the website. It could be things that are very, very subtle. But if you look at yourself when you leave shul, that I'm taking shul with me. Charlie was talking about the thought of a Rebbe that inspires you. Take that with you. Like Yosef HaTzadik, when he was there in the place, he was there in Mitzrayim, he always saw the Demus Dukna Shel Aviv. He saw his father's image in the window. It means that if you're mafsik mimishnaso, if you stop shul when you go to work, if you stop and you don't think of your wife, if you don't think of your kids, if you stop that world of being a Jew, and you look at the office as being another world, a different world, and that light of the world that you began the day in shul is not illuminating the world that you're in the office, and therefore you're admiring the world, but not as Hashem's world, just your mafsik mimishnaso. Otherwise, the Baal Shem Tov said, of course there's nothing wrong. It's a beautiful thing to look at the tree, but that's part of your learning. You're not interrupting your learning. That's part of your learning. Practically speaking, like Charlie said, it's very, very hard. It's very hard. But if you walk out, first of all, if you begin your day in shul, and you carry with you that learning, those thoughts of Kedusha, and you have a Rebbe that you're connected to, and you have those memories and those images in your mind, and you daven, you ask Hashem Yisbarach, not only for the things that are obvious that could bring me down, but even for the more subtle things that are taking place here in the office, that it shouldn't chalila defile me. And you're able to stop a few times during the day at work with nobody noticing, and just under your breath to say a tefillah. And if you're zeichet to have a wonderful wife and children, keep the picture right in front of you. You don't have to have the Chavetz Chaim's picture right in front of you. Make sure you have your wife's picture right in front of you. And you remember, and you have the kids, and you talk about your wife, and you talk about the kids, and you're proud of who you are, and you daven a lot, and kula hai v'ulai, Hashem will watch over you, that it shouldn't chalila, shouldn't seep into you, that you should be able to remain pure as possible.
I just want to add one thing. I don't know if you want to take one more question, then we'll close. I don't know how long we go until. I'm just going to add one thing what Rebbe was saying. In the business world, there's a concept that we use, which is, what gets you here won't take you there. This is a big idiom when it comes to executive management. What gets you here won't take you there. A lot of executives, companies, they fail because they don't hop. The way you start is one way of thinking, and the way you succeed is a different way of thinking. One of the greatest misconceptions that you will encounter is that you need to be accepted to be successful. And it's going to hurt because you're living in Yeshiva University. You don't even go to a secular college, Baruch Hashem. So for many of you in this room, especially if you grew up in New York, you've never really been around in any significant period of time an entire world where most people are not you. When you go into the work world, that will be very stark. It's going to hit early. You're going to feel different. You know why? Because you are different. And you're going to think, the way I am successful, all I know how to be successful, in high school, I did what my buddies did. Everyone played ball, I played ball. Everyone did this, I did this. I had a crew. We went to the same year in Israel together. We hung out. I went to YU, I went to this school. Everything that's made you successful, so to speak, has been in part because you are able to be with other people. You are accepted. You're part of the chevra. You go out in the world and you think that your success is going to come by you being like everybody else. I want you to hear this. That's low-level success. That's what gets you there. When you talk about real success, that's long-term success, it's never based on people that are accepted. It's always based on people that are unique. Uniqueness, appropriate uniqueness, humble uniqueness, nice uniqueness, but uniqueness in the long term is what brings real success. And if you go out in the world and in your gut you think that being a ben melech is lower than being like everybody else,
like as if like you're embarrassed of it. If that's what's in the back of your head, like, it's going to be really, really painful. Because it's really hard to be different. And it's really hard to be different if you don't think that your differences is the greatest thing in the world. If you feel like you have a disadvantage in the negative, I'm telling you, you're going to encounter a lot of tension. If you think about the fact that you are the Ben of the creator of the universe, and you are lucky enough to be of the few that walk around with his banner, and you're able to recognize that that uniqueness is what's going to make you ultimately successful, then you come to work and you are so excited to have the opportunity to shine a little light. You don't realize it's like, you just can't wait for the chance to be able to walk over to somebody with the greatest level of integrity. You can't wait for the opportunity to blow away a project and go home on you just can't wait to tell someone that you've got children and you're younger than the guy who's not even thinking about marriage because he wants. You can't wait to try to explain to some other Jew who's so beautiful but didn't have your background what Purim means. You're so pumped because you are the Ben of the King. And I don't you don't have to put it in their faces. But the excitement that you have, that you get to carry this card, that's the way you have to walk into work. Your difference is the most unique thing in the world. You've got the one who controls everything, and your company is lucky enough to be able to have somebody who's the Ben Melech in their place. And when you stand tall, when you stand proud of who you are, when you walk with your head up high, and you know that the most important thing you have is that relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu. I'm telling you this, and it's hard for you to trust me, but trust me. You will not lose financially, Bani Yisrael. You will be able to not only make a living, you'll be able to actually make an impact on people. Because as Rebbe said, people are chalishing for Hashem. People, I see a thank you Hashem hat in the back. People are like, it's unbelievable. I did a video about this too last week. Goyim, non-from Jews, are chalishing for a little bit of God in their lives in a world that has gone dark. And if you can walk around and show them what it's like to be a person with real midos and integrity, standing for God, I'm telling you this, it may not come in your first year of work. It may not come when everyone's in the bar. I am telling you, you're going to get a phone call, believe that there, from some partner who's got a brother-in-law who like flipped out and he has no idea what's going on and half of my can't eat lobster and it's, you know, God created that too. Or you're going to be seen as a little bit of light in your office, and when you get to that point, you're going to realize that the work that you do and the person you are isn't incongruent. That you can be Mordechai and be an incredible minister and not give up one second of realizing who you are. And if you have that in your career, you're going to be able to actually enjoy and be successful. The guys that go into their careers and they're like Rebbe said, they're two different people. They have something has to break. Something has to give. It may take 5 years. Something's going to go. Either they're going to go at home or in the work. But when you come in proud in the beginning and realize that it is your uniqueness that's going to make you successful, not you being like everybody else, then you represent the Melech. And there's nothing in the world better than having the schutz to represent the Melech. Because the Melech has all the money. And the Melech is the one who gives out the money. And along with this, I'll turn to Rebbe to close. I went to see Rav Busu. Everyone knows who Rav Busu is? The tzaddik in Yerushalayim? Yeah, I went to Rav Busu. I went to Rav Busu this summer, and he said to me the greatest line. He says, Shaul, he said, the greatest mistake that humanity has ever made is that they think that there's a connection between the Shabbos and Parnassah. Just chew on that for a few minutes. There's no connection between Shabbos and Parnassah. Parnassah comes from the Yiddish. The Shabbos is what we have to do for a whole bunch of other reasons. Go through Shabbos Bitachon. In my opinion, before you walk in the workplace, you got to read Shabbos Bitachon 150 times. You got to own that. You got to own it. But when you walk around proud, you'll find that more important than you being successful at your job, you're going to see your job as being a Ben Melech in your job. And it's so much more enjoyable to try to be a Ben Melech in your job than to just be a partner. We got plenty of partners. We don't have enough princes that are walking around. That's your chance. That's your source. I don't know why you have it. I don't know why I have it. And there are a lot of Jews that don't have this. You've got a chance. You've got a source to be a prince. And that's the greatest thing that we're fighting for.
Shkar, thank you everyone for coming, and thank you so much to Charlie and the Mashpia for taking time out of their busy schedule and powering all of us. If anyone wants to daven Maariv, we can have a minute in 2 minutes. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Robert.
He's my brother.
Yeah, good to see you.